Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Judges, the last half of Judges chapter 9, verses 28 through 57. We will see how Abimelech, one of the sons of Gideon, by concubine from Shechem, how Abimelech is destroyed after he, in the first half of chapter 9, which is our context, Abimelech took over Shechem, and he went north to Ophrah, Gideon's hometown. Gideon's now dead, but he had 70 sons, and Abimelech killed every one of them on a big stone. And so we start now in Genesis 9, verses 28 through 29. I'm going to use God's Words translation for this because it's a little bit confusing. God's Words translation is like the NIV. It's real loose, which means it's easier to understand. Verse 28, Gaal, son of Ebed, said, "Who's Abimelech, and who are we, the people of Shechem, that we should serve him? Isn't he, Abimelech, Jerubbaal's son?" Jerubbaal, of course, is Gideon, contender against Baal, because Gideon tore down Joash's father's Baal statue a couple chapters ago. "Isn't Abimelech Gideon's son," says Gaal, "and isn't Zebul his officer? Serve the descendants of Hamor, Shechem's father. Why should we serve Abimelech? How I wish I controlled these people, then I'd get rid of Abimelech. I would tell them, get yourself a big army and come out." All right, these two verses are a little bit confusing. Just remember the two main protagonists are Gaal on the one hand, who's trying to stir up a rebellion in Shechem against Abimelech, who is ruling Shechem. Abimelech being the one son of Gideon who killed 68 of his brothers, all but Jotham, the youngest one, who uttered a curse against him, as we saw in chapter 9, first part of this chapter. Now, I'm going to read you a paraphrase of this verse by John Gill. "Who is this Abimelech the Shechemite? Or who is he more than Shechem, the old prince of this place? The one is no better than the other, nor has a better title to rule and government than the other, that we should serve him. Nay, of the two, the descendants of the old Shechem have the best title." So Gil sets up the contrast between the old Shechemites, the ones who descended legitimately from Hamor, and Absalom, who is a Shechemite because his mother was a concubine of Gideon who came from Shechem, but Abimelech was really from Ophrah and Manasseh, not Shechem and Ephraim. And so basically, as Gil paraphrases these two verses, he's saying that Gaal is saying Abimelech is not really a Shechemite like the old-time Shechemites are, the descendants of Hamor, the aboriginal Shechemites, the Canaanites who came before the Israelites got there. Now, in verse 28, when Gaal says, "Serve the descendants of Hamor," it implies that he is a descendant of Hamor. So that's the way we're going to go with this. The old stock of Shechem, represented by Gaal, is going after the upstarts, the nouveau riche people, under Abimelech. Now notice in verse 28 that Gaal says that Abimelech is Jerubbaal's, Gideon's, son. Now why would he bring that little detail up? Well, it was said to make Abimelech look bad. Gaal was trying to make Abimelech look bad, because Baal was worshipped by the followers of Gaal, and Abimelech's own father, Gideon, had destroyed an idol of Baal in that famous incident when he, in the middle of the night, tore down his father Joash's Baal. So on religious grounds, according to Gaal, Abimelech is not up to snuff, because Gaal is a staunch advocate of Baal-berith, and you can't say that about Abimelech, because his father was a Baal destroyer. Also, the fact that Jerubbaal is mentioned here, and that Abimelech is Jerubbaal's son, as Gaal says to the people of Shechem, Jerubbaal's son, that points out that Abimelech was not even a Shechemite on his father's side. He was not even an Ephraimite on his father's side, because Gideon was from Ophir of Manasseh. Gideon was a Manassite, so really, if the descent goes through the father's line, this Abimelech is not even of the tribe of Manasseh, where Shechem is. The Shechemites were Ephraimites. So Abimelech's not even an Ephraimite. He's a Manassite. He's from a different place. He's not really a Shechemite like we Gaalites are. So there's your conflict. That's the basis of the uprising. Now, Gaal mentions this. "Isn't Zebul his officer?" Now, why would he say that? Well, John Gaal says, quote, "Has he not set him over you, set Zebul over you, not content to rule you himself, is Abimelech? He has set up another as an officer over you under him." He set up Zebul under Abimelech. Abimelech has done that. "And thus you are like to be governed in a tyrannical manner and oppressed." So that's why he mentioned Zebul, who's in Shechem and who's running Shechem. That we'll see later that Abimelech is not in town. He's outside of Shechem at the time, but Zebul, he's left behind to rule the Shechemites, rule the city of Shechem. I mentioned that Gaal sounds like he is claiming to be a descendant of Hamor. Serve the descendants of Hamor, Shechem's father, says Gaal, and that sounds like he's claiming to be a descendant. John Gill says that's a possibility. He says, quote, preferring the descendants of Hamor, the old Canaanitish prince that ruled in this place, to Abimelech, and if Gaal was a descendant of his, he spoke in good earnest and thought this a proper opportunity. If Gaal was a descendant of his, so Gill allows the possibility. If so, then Gaal spoke in good earnest and thought this a proper opportunity to get the government of the city restored to him and his family, since their old religion and idolatry were established among them. And if they had received the one, the Shechemites had received one, the old Shechem, the ancestor Shechem, why not the other, the descendants of the old Shechem, Gaal? Why not? So we go to verse 29, we've already read. It says this, Gaal says this, I wish I controlled these people. Then I'd get Abimelech. I would tell him, get yourself a big army and come out. Now that I would tell him is in the subjunctive. Home of Christian Study Bible has it in the indicative. I said to him. The Home of Christian Study margin says, the Septuagint reads, I would say to him. So there's a translation difference of opinion here. So your options of what Gaal did here is he's might be speaking rhetorically, saying, if Abimelech were present, even though he wasn't present, if he were present, I would tell him. If you go with our God's Word translation here, or the Septuagint. But if it's in the indicative, I said to him, that he actually told Abimelech, well, how did he do it? Well, it could be a representative of Abimelech was present, or maybe Gaal sent a written message to Abimelech. However, it doesn't matter. Abimelech is told, get yourself an army and come out. A challenge which eventually destroy Abimelech and Shechem, for that matter. Now, here's a little foreshadowing from Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown. Quote, he, that's Gaal, seems to have been a boastful, impudent, and cowardly person, totally unfit to be a leader in a revolutionary crisis. The consequence was that he allowed himself to be drawn into an ambush, was defeated, the city of Shechem destroyed and strewn with salt. The people took refuge in the stronghold in the tower, which was set on fire, and all in it perished. And we'll see that as we go through this chapter. We go down to Judges 9, verses 30 through 33. When Zebul, the ruler of the city, that's Z-E-B-U-L, when Zebul, the ruler of the city, heard the words of Gaal, son of Ebed, he was angry. So he sent messengers secretly to Abimelech, saying, look, Gaal, son of Ebed, with his brothers have come to Shechem and are turning the city against you, Abimelech. Now tonight, you and the people, you, Abimelech, and the people with you, are to come wait in ambush in the countryside. Then get up early, and at sunrise, charge the city. When he, Gaal, and the people who are with him come out against you, Abimelech, do to Gaal, whatever you can. Now, Zebul, of course, was the officer of Abimelech. Abimelech was out of town. Zebul was in charge. If Zebul was ever inclined to join the Shechemites against Abimelech, Gaal's opposition to Abimelech stopped that. Zebul is now ticked off, said he was angry, actually. He sent messengers secretly to Abimelech. Now, the NASB has deceitfully he sent messages to Abimelech. If that's the proper translation, then Zebul could have pretended he was in sympathy with Gaal and said, oh, yes, Gaal, I'm with you. We're going to fight Abimelech and do him in. But then he, on the side, sent messages to Abimelech. So, deceitfully, the Holman Christian Study Bible says secretly, whatever. However he did it, we don't know. But Abimelech got word of the revolt that Gaal, with his brothers, his relatives, are turning Shechem against you, Abimelech. They're turning the city against you. Holman Christian Study Bible has stirring up the city against you. The King James has Gaal is fortifying the city against you. And Adam Clark takes that King James translation and says this, quote, under pretense of repairing the walls and towers, they were actually putting the place, Shechem, in a state of defense, intending to seize on the government as soon as they should find Abimelech coming against them. Well, I think it's stirring up is probably the better translation. I think so anyway. Now, we're not told why Abimelech is outside his capital city, but he was. He was in a position to set up an ambush to sucker Gaal out of Shechem so he could wipe Gaal out, which eventually he did. We'll see in a minute. Now, Gaal says, come out in the darkness, and at sunrise attack, the darkness would cover the advance of Abimelech's troops to the place of ambush, and then they could attack when the sun came up, when they could see what they were doing. We go now to Judges 9, verses 34 through 38. So Abimelech and all the people who were with him arose by night and lay in wait against Shechem in four companies. Now Gaal, the son of Ebed, went out and stood at the entrance of the city gate, and Abimelech and the people who were with him arose from the ambush. When Gaal saw the people, he said to Zebul, "Look, people are coming down from the tops of the mountains." But Zebul said to him, "You are seeing the shadow of the mountains as if they were men." Gaal spoke again and said, "Behold, people are coming down from the highest part of the land, and one company comes by the way of the diviner's oak." He's seeing different companies coming from different directions. Nobody knows where that diviner's oak is, but Gaal's seeing some stuff that's making him suspicious. Verse 38, then Zebul said to him, "Where is your boasting now with which you said, 'Who is Abimelech that we should serve him?'" So now Zebul drops his pretense. He says, "Hey, those are people. Those are soldiers coming after you. Those aren't shadows." Verse 38 continues. Zebul continues, "Is this not the people whom you despised?" In other words, Abimelech, Gaal, you despise Abimelech and his people. "Go out now and fight with them." And so now Gaal realizes he's in a world of trouble. Four companies coming at him. That's so they could attack all four sides of the city to surround Shechem. The mountains they came down from was probably Mount Ebal and Gerizim, those two famous mountains from which the blessings and curses were pronounced. From Ebal on the north, the curses were pronounced. From Gerizim on the south, the blessings were pronounced of the law. If you follow the law or don't follow the law, this was done by Joshua and predicted or commanded by Moses before they crossed the Jordan River, and then it was done by Joshua after they got across. So these are two famous mountains. Now, when Zebul told Gaal that he was looking at shadows and not real soldiers, there's a couple of options here. Was he mocking Gaal? Was Zebul mocking Gaal? Was he saying, "You can't see anything but just because you've just gotten up. Your eyes are foggy. And anyway, why? Are you afraid of shadows now, big bad Gaal? You're afraid of shadows?" Well, I don't think that's what he was doing. I think he was seriously pretending that the men were actually shadows in order to deceive Gaal. The longer he could deceive them, the less time that Gaal would have to prepare to meet the advancing Abimelech and his soldiers. Now, in verse 37, it says, Gaal says, "Behold, people are coming down from the highest part of the land." The NIV has the center of the land. If so, then it would be in the valley, in the middle of the mountains, coming at them straight ahead. King James has in the middle of the land. So there's a translation issue there. So either they're coming down from the mountains. I would suspect they're coming down from Mount Ebal, down from Mount Gerizim, and also straight down the valley in the center of those two mountains, not to mention one in the rear of Shechem. We go now to Judges 9, verses 39 through 40. So Gaal went out before the leaders of Shechem and fought with Abimelech. Abimelech chased him, and he, that's Gaal, fled before him, before Abimelech, and many fell wounded up to the entrance of the gate. So Gaal, having gone out to fight, had to fall back. He fell all the way back to Shechem's gate, looking for safety. Gaal says he went all the way into the city, which I think is probably true, leaving his wounded comrades lying there on the ground at the gate. We go now to Judges 9, verse 41. Then Abimelech remained at Aramah, but Zebul drove out Gaal and his relatives so that they could not remain in Shechem. Well, Gaal got back into the city, but there waiting for him was Abimelech's lieutenant, Zebul, and Zebul says, "Out of town, Gaal." I'm surprised he didn't kill him, but he didn't, drove him out. He's gone. Gaal disappears from history. Abimelech is still outside, having engineered this ambush, and he stays at a place called Aramah, which nobody knows where that is, but I'm sure it's close by to Shechem. Gaal says it's probably the place where he was when the rebellion broke out. Easton's dictionary says nothing about Aramah, so it's not that important. But Abimelech is there. Gaal, outside of Shechem, and inside of Shechem, his lieutenant is ruling, Zebul. What political support Gaal had in Shechem was destroyed by the lost battle with Abimelech. And so it looks like Abimelech is sitting pretty. This Abimelech, the child of Gideon who killed his 68 brothers on a stone in Ophrah. We go now to Judges 9, verses 42 through 45. Now it came about the next day that the people went out to the field, and it was told to Abimelech. So he took his people and divided them into three companies and lay in wait in the field. When he looked and saw the people coming out from the city, he arose against them and slew them. Then Abimelech and the company who was with him dashed forward and stood in the entrance of the city gate. The other two companies then dashed off against all who were in the field and slew them. Abimelech fought against the city all that day, and he captured the city and killed the people who were in it. Then he razed the city and sowed it with salt. Now the first question is, having been beaten once under the leadership of Gaal, why did the people of Shechem go out the next day into the field? To fight Abimelech again? Could be. Gaal says it's not likely. Here's another option. They went back out in the field to plow and sow the field. They figured, hey, Abimelech's gone back to Aramah. He's out of sight. Zebul, his lieutenant, is in charge of the city. Peace has been reestablished. Gaal is gone. Abimelech is less likely to be irritated with the citizens of Shechem because their revolutionary leader, Gaal, had disappeared, had been run out of town. So let's go plant. Let's go back to life. I think that's the better option. But unfortunately for the people of Shechem, Abimelech divides his soldiers into three companies. One goes to the gate, two surround the field, kill all the people who are in the field, assuming they're planning. They died there. And then the one company goes to the gate so they could capture the city. I really should say they should confirm the capture of the city because Zebul's inside running the city. Abimelech put a company at the gate to prevent the people in the field from getting back to the city in safety. Also to prevent people in the city coming out to help those in the field. So that was a tactical move. That was a smart move. He goes inside the city in verse 45. He killed the Shechemites, but of course he didn't kill his own allies and his own family who were in Shechem. That should go without saying. And then he did something interesting. He salted Shechem. Even though this was his native home, he salted it. Now, why did he do that? Well, it wasn't to make Shechem barren. As Gill and Clark point out, if he wanted to make Shechem barren, he would have sowed the fields, not the city. The salt would have ruined the fields. But he didn't do that. He sowed the city. This was a symbolic move to show his contempt for Shechem, because salt is a symbol of perpetual destruction. I think, didn't the Romans salt? They might have salted the fields too, but they salted Carthage. And Carthage never came back after the Punic Wars, 3rd century or so B.C. There's another interesting time when the Emperor Frederick Barbarossa, I believe he was 12th century A.D. in Germany, he sowed the streets of Milan with salt after he conquered Milan. Well, that didn't hurt Milan's productivity. It was just a symbol of contempt. And that's probably why Abimelech salted Shechem. We go now to Judges 9, verses 46 through 49. When all the leaders of the Tower of Shechem heard of it, they entered the inner chamber of the temple of El Berith. It was told Abimelech that all the leaders of the Tower of Shechem were gathered together. Remember, the population has been wiped out, but the leaders retreated to the tower, a stronghold in the city. This is very typical of ancient cities. It happened a lot. I think it happened once, and I've read so much ancient history, I can't remember which is where, but I think it happened in Athens one time when the Persians came. I'm pretty sure the leaders of Athens tried to hold themselves up on the Acropolis. I think it happened in Sicily when the Greeks were attacking Sicily. But at any rate, this is a common thing. This is what you do. You run to the tower in the stronghold of the city. So even though the population below could be destroyed, you're sitting up there. Of course, you're in trouble because you can't get any food. Well, the people of Shechem, the leaders of Shechem, after they left, they decided to leave the tower, the high place, the stronghold, and they went into the inner chamber of the temple, which I suspect was in the same area the tower was, protected from the people below. Verse 47, it was told Abimelech that all the leaders of the Tower of Shechem were gathered together. So Abimelech went up to Mount Zalmon, he and all the people who were with him, and Abimelech took an axe in his hand and cut down a branch from the trees and lifted it and laid it on his shoulder. Then he said to the people who were with him, "What you have seen me do, hurry and do likewise." All the people also cut down each one his branch and followed Abimelech and put them on the inner chamber and set the inner chamber on fire. That's the inner chamber of the temple of El Berith. Set the inner chamber on fire over those inside so that all the men of the Tower of Shechem also died, about 1,000 men and women. I said it was the leaders. The leaders were there, but it was also some other men with them and some women too. Now, some people say the tower must have been out of the city. I don't think so. I think the tower could have been in the city for reasons I've just said. John Gill, however, says the city had been destroyed and salted. The tower would not have survived. I don't think so. Towers within cities can hold out from invaders below. I just gave you a couple of examples from my reading of ancient history, which is not that extensive, so I don't know. I don't know where Gil got that idea. Now, the temple was El Berith. Sometimes the Shechemites were said to worship Baal Berith. Baal means Lord of the Covenant. El Berith means God of the Covenant. I assume it's the same God, same temple. I don't know why they used a different alternate name here. Now, Abimelech goes to Mount Zalmon to cut down some trees to provide fuel for the fire that he's going to toast the Shechemites with. Now, where is this Mount Zalmon? John Gill says it's a mountain near Shechem. Well, that's very helpful. Of course it is. Some people think it's the same mountain as the Zalmon that's mentioned in Psalms. Psalm 68, verse 14, when the Almighty scattered the kings there, it was snowing in Zalmon. Easton says that Zalmon means shady. It's a wood near Shechem from which Abimelech and his party brought boughs and put them to the hold of Shechem. Probably the southern peak of Gerizim, now called Jebel Suman. That makes sense. Southern peak of Mount Gerizim. Gerizim's to the south of Shechem. Shechem's in the valley between Gerizim and Ebal on the north. So, I suspect that's what I'm going to go with. Zalmon is the southern peak of Gerizim. Not that it really matters. So, Abimelech lights his bonfire and burns down the tower of the inner chamber of the Temple of El Berit, and thus kills 1,000 men and women and the leaders of Shechem. And so Jotham's curse, his famous curse, in Judges 9, the first part of the chapter, chapter 20, first part of the verse, Jotham in giving his fable. Remember, let me review that fable or that allegory. The trees were looking for a ruler. The trees stood for the Shechemites. They were looking for a ruler. So they went to three fruitful type of plants. They first went to the olive tree. That was Gideon. The olive tree said, no, I'm too busy making oil. Then they went to the fig tree. And the fig tree said, no, I don't want to be your leader trees. I'm too busy making sweet figs. Then the trees went to the grapevine. And the grapevine said, no, I'm too busy making wine. So the people of Shechem, not being able to find a leader, the trees, they went to a bramble bush. And that bramble bush was this very same Abimelech. And Jotham gets up on Mount Gerizim and he says, hey guys, hey Shechemites, this bramble bush that you've decided to be your leader, you're going to rest under its shade. Of course, bramble bushes don't give any shades. And then he said, fire is going to burn you up because bramble bushes burn pretty good, thorn bushes. So that's just a summary. Let me read you Judges 9:20, first part of the verse. This is Jotham says this, but if not, let fire come out from Abimelech and consume the men of Shechem and Beth Millo. Beth Millo was somewhere around Shechem, probably. So fire is coming out from Abimelech. Well, that's just literally what happened. Abimelech got his boughs of wood, his trees from Mount Zalmon. He takes it down there to the Temple of El Berit and burns them up and consumes the men of Shechem, just like Jotham had fulfilled. It's ironic they're in a pagan god's temple. That god El Berit didn't seem to help him too much, did he? Now, with 1,000 men and women, that would seem to make El Berit's temple pretty large. So Clark says it has to mean not only the inner chamber, but also the precincts of the temple where the people were staying. The fire spread from the inner chamber to the precincts and toasted them all like marshmallows. We go now to Judges 9:50-57, and we will finish up this audio. Then Abimelech went to Thebes. Let me just stop right here and tell you where Thebes is. If you'll look at the map, Shechem is where the big fire has just occurred, which is right dead between Mount Ebal on the north and Mount Gerizim on the south. Shechem is roughly west of Adam on the Jordan River, which is about two-thirds of the way south from the Dead Sea, going toward from the Sea of Galilee, going toward the Dead Sea. So that's where Shechem is. Well, if you go about 11 miles northeast up a road that runs from Shechem through Tirzah to a place called Thebes, that's where Abimelech went. If you would continue on that road, I don't know, what is that, about 12, 13 more miles, you get to Beth Shan, which the Romans call Scythopolis. And I've been there. It's an interesting place. It's full of Roman ruins, but Beth Shan, famous place. So Thebes is halfway between Shechem and Beth Shan. And Beth Shan, of course, is right at the bottom, the southeastern end of the Jezreel Valley, right before you get to the Jordan River, in the Jordan Valley, basically, about 10 miles south of the tip of the Sea of Galilee. So that's where Thebes is. Now, Thebes is famous for what happens here. According to Easton, Thebes means, quote, brightness. It was a place some 11 miles northeast of Shechem, as I've just said. It's on the road to Scythopolis. I just said that. Abimelech led his army against this place because of its participation in the conspiracy of the men of Shechem. Now, this text doesn't really say why he went up there, but I'm sure it's because they had joined Gaal in that revolutionary conspiracy, and so he's going up there to stomp out the fires of rebellion. Now, here's a little foreshadowing from Easton's, but as he, that's Abimelech, drew near to the strong tower in Thebes, to which its inhabitants had fled for safety, and he was about to set fire to it, a woman cast a fragment of millstone at him and, quote, all to break his skull, as the King James has it. His armor-bearer thereupon thrust him through, and he died. Well, let's see how this happened. We'll see how this happens here in more detail. All right, first of all, in verse 52, he approached the entrance of the tower to burn it. So it's a little ambiguous. Was he trying to burn the entrance of the tower or to burn the tower? Well, all these cities had towers. They could be made out of stone. You're not going to burn the stone, but the wood gate, you could burn that. Or it could be the whole tower's made out of wood. It's not really clear. But that's what he was getting ready to do. And then this woman, may God bless her soul, was at the top of the tower, and she had a millstone. Now, I'm sure a woman can't pick up a millstone. I mean, a man couldn't pick up a millstone. Those things are heavy. But they had them up there at the top of the tower, perched on the edge, so that when people came to attack the city, they could push the millstones off the edge and kill those who were below. And so that's what the woman did. And she clobbered Abimelech on the head and wounded him badly. Now, he gets his armor-bearer to kill him. So Abimelech is killed, and this is poetic justice. Abimelech had killed 70 sons of Gideon on a stone, as we saw in the previous audio, I think it was, and now he was killed by a stone. What goes around comes around. Now Abimelech said to his armor-bearer, run me through, kill me, so it would not be said that I was killed by a woman. Now John Gill makes an interesting point. It's ironic that Abimelech's suicide called attention to his death at the hand of a woman, because now we're still talking about it 3,000 plus years later. Look at old Abimelech. He got killed by a millstone from a woman, dropped it on his head. What kind of a soldier is he? He would have been better just to have gone ahead and died after the millstone hit him. In fact, this story of Abimelech dying by the millstone was even remembered in David's time, 2 Samuel 11:21. Who struck down Abimelech, the son of Jerubbaal, Gideon? Did not a woman throw an upper millstone on him from the wall so that he died at Thebez? We'll talk about why that story was used when we get to 2 Samuel chapter 11, but it's just interesting. It's a very well-known story. And so the members of Abimelech's army broke up. They went back to their home, as it says in verse 55, and the city of Thebez is saved. And so the chapter ends with a summary statement. Verse 56, thus God repaid the wickedness of Abimelech, which he had done to his father in killing his 70 brothers. That's rounded off. It was actually 68 because he was one of the 70 and Jotham survived. So it was 68 brothers. And God returned all the wickedness of the men of Shechem on their heads, and the curse of Jotham, the son of Jerubbaal, came upon them, the son of Gideon. So what was Jotham's curse? I've mentioned it already, but just for review, may fire come from Abimelech and consume the lords of Shechem. Well, that happened when Abimelech took boughs, trees from Mount Zalmon and took them and burned up the temple of El-Berith where all the lords of Shechem were. So that part of Jotham's curse was fulfilled. And then the last part of Judges 9:20, may fire come from the lords of Shechem and consume Abimelech. Now that didn't literally happen, but Abimelech got wiped out. Remember, this is a parable. It's a fable about the bramble bush sending out fire and receiving fire, getting burned up himself. Well, in the fable, he got burned up, but in reality, he got hit on the head with a millstone. Again, it's not one, although it is true, the first part of that curse was fulfilled literally. The second part wasn't. That's no big deal. It's a parable. It's not meant to be fulfilled literally. So justice has come. It's come on the Shechemites for worshiping Baal-Berith instead of Yahweh. Their city is destroyed, salted, their leaders killed. Justice has come on Abimelech for killing 68 of his brothers on a stone for the sake of political power. And so the sad history of the descendants of Gideon comes to an end, and now we will go in our next audio to Judges 10, verses 1 through 18. We'll look at the story of Tola and Jair. I hope you stay tuned for that as we continue our study of the book of Judges, and I hope you enjoyed this audio.